This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It's Friday, 9th of April, 2021, and we have a market that's still in a good mood in the U.S. and still in a funk out in Asia, at least certainly in China, where we had another negative session overnight in the Chinese mainland shares, and in part likely driven by that PPI release for March out at 4.4% year-on-year versus 3.6% advance expected. Peter, I've got some cautionary notes later, at least for the longer term, medium to longer term here on U.S. equities for sure. I think some of the recent strength has been on the lower yields, but the boost from that, I think, has pretty much played out, I would expect here. But what's your take on the market before I delve into that and what you're seeing in terms of market breadth, et cetera?
Well, as I said yesterday and the days before, we have a very strong momentum in equities right now. And I think on the positive side, I would argue, is that the retail participation is lower. And despite of that, we are continuing to push forward. So that sort of indicates to me that this is this can actually fly without the massive retail participation. You have put in the VIX index on slide 2. It's dipped below 17, typically very bullish for equities as well. But it increases the risk, of course, of a potential hiccup at one point, but typically low implied volatility levels bolster momentum. And as you said, I mean, the interest rates for now have paused. We'll come back to the China PPI story just in a few minutes. So I just basically see green light. And as you can see on slide 3, I've put in our equity themes overview here. It's just it's basically positive across the board. I would definitely zoom in today on the commodity sector. It was one of the worst performing themes yesterday's session, but still very strong for the year, up 16%. I've put in a chart there where you can see this spectacular run up since the lows in 2020. And I think with the print we got, the price positive print from China on producer price index for March, I think the focus will spring back very soon to inflation and the commodity sector.
Well, it's certainly in the commodity space, we're seeing a lot of focus on that in FX, where the commodity-linked currencies have been quite weak since yesterday, especially within the G10. You mentioned the Chinese PPI, again, at 4.4% year-on-year, and you showed the six-month difference in the year-on-year index, which enhances a bit the recent run-up in that index. And I guess the thinking out in Asia is that this is a concern, at least for risky assets, because with this, in addition to this big stimulus coming through the pipeline here from the U.S., which could drive some more pricing pressures over at least another quarter or so, is going to keep the policy mix tight. So not seeing any relief there. Ola, are you picking up anything in the commodity space that's moving a lot? Nothing's really crossed my radar, except your mention, which you've already got a mention of later on, and that's the gold market.
That's right, John. We did have another attempt yesterday to the upside in gold. You can see that here on slide 9 in today's deck. We're basically starting to challenge that 1755, that to 1765 range. But as I also write there, is it following the double bottom? Are we now just adding a double top to the current range? That remains to be seen. So 1765 remains the key. As you mentioned, the PPI in China overnight came in on the strong side, as you can see on the insert there as well. Part of that is clearly due to the surge we had in commodity prices over the past year, not least oil, and you can see the impact on the continued increase in the continued pricing in of the base effect in crude oil over the coming months. That we'll see that number to continue to pick up. So at this point, weaker yields, lower yields, and a weaker dollar this week has been the main driver. So obviously, in order for to see a break, which potentially could attract some momentum, fresh momentum buying, we need to see that support continue at least until we get a clear break. So we're not out of the woods yet, and I'm not calling a breakout here because it's just simply been in this range for this range seems to be quite solid for now. So we need to keep a very close eye on on the dollar and yields. Just want to highlight the oil market, even though there's not a lot to highlight, because we are stuck in the range there as well, 60 to 65, big numbers on Brent. But we have seen the even though stock markets have made a new high here over the broader indices had a very good week. We've seen some weakness in the energy sector, and I suppose that's part of the potential re-rotation back to momentum, as the Nasdaq has done really well this week. So just taking some of the sting out of the rally. But overall, you can see it's really just a reflection of oil prices. They're more or less identical, the two graphs here shown on slide 10. So that's primarily where we continue to see the input from. And with that in mind, I struggle to see Brent break much below $60 at this point. OPEC Plus got the upper hand. They can adjust production as they pleases.
Yeah, and on the yield front, which has been such a key driver recently, it doesn't seem like tactically we get much of a signal from yields. They go down and they go up, seemingly in opposite directions every day. So we saw a drop yesterday in yields, disappointing initial jobless claims, and even that one combined with the continuing claims, which was also disappointingly dropped by a smaller amount than hoped, keeps that high frequency indicator in sort of a concerning territory, if you will. And now I'll just move to my, where I see a little bit of concern here going forward, for at least for, if not for the equity market, just to sort of the cycle in general. And that is the idea that if we're supposed to be in a fiscal dominance framework, in other words, that any new stimulus and any driving force for the upside here, besides from animal spirits and productivity, is going to come from the fiscal side rather than from monetary policy. I have some real concerns based on the development yesterday that we're seeing West Virginia Senator Joe Manchin, a Democrat from a very, very Trump-leaning / Republican-leaning state, making quite a stand on not wanting to end the filibuster and not supporting this reconciliation process, which is very technical, but basically it's a way that you can get a simple majority vote in the Senate to pass basic spending bills, even those of considerable size, like the recent Biden stimulus, which managed to pass on a purely partisan vote. So I've got a graphic from CNN, I think it's very useful, on slide 5, showing what the implications are here. And the implications are really tremendous, because if he really is going to stick to his guns, it will mean that any major package, and any package really at all, if he doesn't even support the reconciliation process, will have to see bipartisan support. That is a very tall ask in the U.S. political environment, to say the least, when there's a Trump base that doesn't even agree that the election was fair and should have gone to Biden, et cetera. So it makes a list there of the kinds of issues that will not pass, including even this large infrastructure bill. So this is a dramatic new roadblock to me that needs to be cleared to have this story of fiscal dominance playing out, and beyond the initial sugar high we're going to get from this last passed stimulus bill. We have that. We have the fact that even if we do get an infrastructure bill, the Biden administration has expressed the intent to offset that with corporate tax rises. I've mentioned that recently. And then we also talked about quite a bit earlier this week, the Yellen, or yesterday, in fact, Secretary of Treasury Yellen's a proposal for a global minimum tax, which is, I think, looks like it's getting a pretty warm reception around in the OECD. So these are issues that going forward are really critical for risk appetite, for earnings, of course, for the large international companies that are a significant part of market cap, et cetera. Peter, I don't know if you want to weigh in before I have a couple of FX slides I'd like to get through.
No, at my main focus today, which I will be writing about, is our introduction of the new theme basket, where we are focusing on the Chinese consumer and technology sector. So basically the part of the private sector which we think is the most interesting in terms of shareholder value creation, but also where the government potentially could leave that part of the market alone, maybe except for the most major technology companies. And that's actually something we touched upon yesterday with the Prosus sale of their 2% stake in Tencent, reducing it from 31 to 29. So they're still a major shareholder. But as we alluded to, to me, it's, it smells of an indication that they believe that the trajectory for technology regulation is definitely going to hurt earnings growth going forward. And that was why we also said that we think the going forward, the Chinese consumer discretionary consumer stable stocks will be more interesting, because they don't build their products and their earnings growth around, at least not as their core product, around user data to the same degree as Alibaba and Tencent, which is a potential threat to the power structure in China. And that's why we think seeing this this crackdown. So so you can see here on slide 12, we have compiled a list of 40 stocks within technology, which spans medical technology, but it can also be, you know, hardware manufacturing from you know, image sensory products to semiconductors, can be display panels, telecommunication, but then also within the consumer markets, we have everything from household appliances, smartphone manufacturers. We have gaming stocks, we have beverage companies, etc., restaurants, chains. I think it's actually a fairly interesting list, and a lot of the companies are actually remarkably strong companies. I think there are still a lot of opportunities here. Some of them, I'll write more about it today, but some of them are only accessible through the mainland shares. So luckily, if you're a client with Saxo, you can trade those. Yeah, I will discuss that at length in my article today.
Pretty amazing run-up in the performance chart you're showing there on the right in that slide from, you know, 200 plus at the pandemic lows to over 700 at the recent highs before the correction. So, wow. Very interesting story there. Now, in FX, so getting back to sort of the day-to-day action here, we have, you know, it's really not about the dollar. It's about the, on the weak side, the commodity currencies in the last few sessions. So they're kind of treading water versus the dollar. And then what's been strong, which has been the negative yielders. I've talked about that earlier this week as well. And we're seeing that continuing to a degree, sort of in fits and starts. And we have some interesting technical formations developing where it's interesting, but nothing is yet broken. So I just want to highlight a couple of those among those Dollar Canada, which looks interesting today. You can see that on slide 6 ahead of today's Canadian jobs data. Some of it is leaning, if you will, or sloping head and shoulders formation there with a pretty clear line of resistance just above 126. So looking at that. And then on slide 7, sort of a risk on, risk off traditionally pair, Aussie versus yen. Could be tracing out quite a large head and shoulders formation. And again, this would fit somewhat along the lines of concerns beyond this quarter about where is the fiscal dominance coming in after that time frame. And you can just see how far we've come. So just even a further consolidation within a very almost secular trend context is possible without saying that everything's going to revert back to the very old ranges. And then similarly on the trend overview I have on slide 8 of G10FX plus the Chinese renminbi, you can see the euro's gotten well into positive territory. The dollar's lost a little bit of momentum, but it's not really the story. And sterling is really struggling. Apparently it's become a pro-cyclical currency. And then the negative yielders like Swiss franc, etc., picking up steam. The yen not quite in the positive column yet. But look at that Euro Aussie chart. It's breaking above a pretty critical level, this 156 area. Again, highlighting the weakness in these pro-cyclical currencies versus the sort of the lowest yielders in the FX space. Back to commodities. Ola, you mentioned oil. Really not getting much, a lot of churning within a very tight range there, waiting for signals on that front. But corn is heating up a bit, it looks like. Again, what's up there, and you know, what's the next steps here for I mean, this is a really key input for many countries. I'm thinking especially Mexico in terms of food prices, and even for some countries even social stability to a degree. I remember there were almost riots back in I think it was 11 or 12 with the corn prices.
Absolutely. And just before we talk about corn, we saw the monthly report yesterday from the FAO, the food 95 different food commodities, and it basically highlighted the inflation is running at a, or food inflation is running at the most elevated rate, I believe, in 8 years. So so that's it is an area that has attracted a lot of attention. And one of the leaders in that search is the corn. We are, as we can see on this slide 11, we have reached the highest close yesterday since 2013. The stock levels in the US reserves are dwindling pretty fast due to an amazing amount of exports. You can see that in the insert. I borrowed that chart from one of the Reuters journalists, and you can see how the export of U.S. corn has just been phenomenal so far this year. So we need a strong crop season, and that's really going to be the key. Today we got the World Agricultural Supply and Demand monthly report, and I just insert the table there as well on slide 11, and you can see the market is pricing in a reduction in corn stocks, no change in soy, and a small addition in wheat. So any major abbreviation from these expectations could trigger some volatility later today, but corn is most certainly one that's worth keeping an eye on.
All right, and then as we look forward to next week on earnings, let's refresh. We mentioned earlier this week, but I think it's worth a refresh here ahead of the weekend to prepare yourself, because we are rolling into the proper earnings season in the U.S., Peter, and there's a couple of interesting stories you've mentioned also in this morning's quick take on where we should focus in terms of the consumer in the U.S., and then as well, even in the financial services industry next week.
Yeah, so it starts next week, really on Wednesday, with the two major U.S. Banks, Wells Fargo and J.P. Morgan Chase. So obviously that will be interesting because of their large footprint among U.S. consumers. And Teladoc Health I've marked in red because it's one of those you could call bubble-like stocks, or part of that network of stocks that are incredibly richly valued relative to expectation and revenue growth, etc. So it's one of those stocks that if it doesn't really deliver, it could potentially have spillover effects into the rest of that network of richly valued equities. And then Charles Schwab I've highlighted because of the slowdown we've talked about, John, the recent slowdown in retail activity. It will be interesting to hear their thoughts, whether they see the same thing. And then we have Delta Airlines as well on Thursday next week with, you know, giving some indications of whether, you know, aviation activity or, you know, air passenger traffic is gaining traction. And then the following weeks we'll have the industrials and we'll have the technology stocks, and then it really kicks into gear. But I want to highlight as well, when you see the chart here on slide 13, you can see the spectacular run up in earnings from the Nasdaq 100 versus the S&P 500. I should probably make the time axis make the chart start maybe only from a few years ago, because, you know, compounding makes this chart very difficult to really see. But what I want to show here is that technology stocks have done so well that in order for the broader market to rally, that's the orange line S&P 500 or the dark blue line MSCI World, we need to see earnings starting in Q1 here. It's a fresh year and there's a fresh stimulus on the tap. We need to see companies beginning to lift their earnings, because as you can see, we are still in a drawdown in terms of earnings, both in the S&P 500 and the MSCI World.
Yeah, and then linking that point a little bit back to an earlier point, that is this this idea of the global minimum tax. I mean, a lot of that is only going to affect something like the world's largest, or at least the U.S.'s largest, 40 to 50 companies. And a lot of those profits are in that green line you show on that chart. So very interesting for to track that issue, definitely for the longer term. I think especially any sensitivity to headlines around that in the coming months, it's obviously something like that's going to take quite a long time to hammer out if they ever do agree on something. Let's go to the calendar. Again, very light today. We have the Canadian jobs data for today, for March out today, and the March PPI out of the U.S. And more interesting next week for most will be the March CPI from the U.S., although the problems with this indicator in terms of how it reflects inflation, this owner equivalent rent bit and various things in the computation of that index make it not terribly responsive. It gets more interesting on the Treasury front, and we'll have Altea in next week to take you through that, as we have auctions on 3 years and 10 years on Monday, and then the big 30-year Wednesday. Speeches from Powell and Vice Chair Clarida midweek. I think we've sort of beat a dead horse on Fed expectations. It's wait and see from them. More interesting, perhaps, is the RBNZ meeting, where we might be looking for macroprudential measures from them on housing, and could be weighing against the Kiwi there. Turkish central bank absolutely critical for the Turkish lira because of the recent shock shuffle in the central bank leadership there. That'll be up on Thursday. And then things like the U.S. retail sales, which of course will be interesting given the recent stimulus rounds and that data series, how it spikes and then fades in coming months will be interesting to watch. Lots more on the calendar there on slide 14 for you to have a look at. For today, that's going to be a wrap. And of course, be careful out there. Have a great weekend. And we'll be back next week. Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter at Saxo Market Call or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.